Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
I know who our favorite Shanks is.
Yeah, I got one favorite Shanks.
It ain't golf.
Nope.
It's our man Bill Shanks. BraveCentral.com, thesuperstations.com. Bill, good morning. How are you, sir?
Good morning. How are you guys doing?
We're hanging in there.
We've been
better. That's the easiest way of putting it. And I hope you are as well.
I am, yep. Yeah, doing well. This should be a national holiday, mm-hmm. but instead we're obviously going through a tough time, but this is usually one of my best days of the year. I love this day, opening day, but we joked several weeks ago, remember, about having to somehow take a little afternoon nappy poo so we could stay up to 10:10 and watch the first game, but we won't have to worry about that tonight.
Yeah, I wish I was complaining about how late this game was going to start tonight. I'd give anything for it to start at 11:30 or midnight if that's what it took, but here we are, man. But I guess it would have been Mike Soroka versus Mad Bum tonight. Is that what we're kind of assuming?
Oh, yeah, which that's the only saving grace of this. We don't have to watch Mad Bum beat us for the first game of the season. But, no, it's a weird day. It's just, you know, with the rain we had the other day, I guess you guys got it too, but it's like the grass is green now and the days are getting beautiful and you just, you know, sports is like a calendar. We know when it gets cooler, what's supposed to be played outside, and we know when it gets a little warmer, what's supposed to be played outside, and that's not happening right now. And it's tough, man. It's I've really had to fight. I mean, look, I'm a sportscaster. Sports is kind of my life. I've kind of had to fight depression in the last couple of days. I've been fighting it. I really have, and I've. Look, everything we say, of course, is a disclaimer. We know there are bigger things going on, and our hearts go out to everybody. Not only the people who are suffering, but the workers who are suffering with them and trying to make them better. But, man, for us that rely on this so much, you'll have to forgive our crazy behavior as we just we're not used to this.
Yeah, you're right, and you know, the trickle down of how it affects everybody, and we just need to get things back to normal. That's the key, yep. And you know, having you on with us certainly helps. I know we get a lot of folks that appreciate just the normalcy that we're providing in the mornings, that you provide for your listeners,
yeah,
in the,
yeah,
afternoon, that kind of thing too. In fact, I mentioned before the previous break that we would have Brave scores in the morning and throughout this, thanks to Stratomatic. Now, I know you've played Stratomatic, and they are simulating the season for us while we're in this. So I'll welcome it. I can't wait to see what Stratomatic thinks of the season. So we will have a result tomorrow of the Soroka and Mad Bum matchup.
Oh, that's awesome. So does that mean they're also allowing bets on the Stratomatic matchup?
Hey, nothing would surprise me at this point.
I know.
Each afternoon at 2 o'clock, you can actually break the news on your show. Stratomatic will announce the results, standing stats, and key game highlights from that day's scheduled contest through the website, social channels, and multimedia presentation. So you can rock and roll at 3 o'clock today with the Braves and Diamondbacks score before they even play the game tonight at 10:10.
Love it.
Wow, that's awesome. Well, and I just walked by the television a minute ago, and on Fox and Friends, they had a headline about sports betting being at an all-time low. And so I guarantee you they'll find some way to bet on the Stratomatic games now.
I guess. Yeah, I know. Did you play that board? Did you have that board game?
I didn't. I played it, but I had some different – I had this great thing, and I wish I even knew the name of it, David. I think I even still have it around somewhere. And it was a thing where it was, you just kind of push the button and you'd see what happened. And this is how bad a baseball fan I was, okay? I was probably 10, and I had a buddy who was a big Cincinnati Reds fan, and which was not usually very good for me because back in those days, the Reds were, you know,
owned the Braves.
Against the Braves, yes. But his dad grew up in Kentucky, so he was a big Reds fan. The first game I ever actually went and saw was in 78 against the Big Red Machine, and it was because his dad's favorite team was in Atlanta. And, by the way, side story, my mother took a picture of me and my friend overlooking the Reds dugout with Tom Seaver in the background pitching a bullpen. Got home, developed the film, and I'm halfway in the picture. I almost disowned my mother at 8 years old. But anyway, but so we used to play this game and over the phone now, over the phone, where we would have lineups and we'd say, okay, you know, Pete Rose is up at the plate, and I would hit the button, and, you know, I was honest, and I would say what would happen and so forth, and we would keep score of a game on the stupid little machine. I mean, that's how bad of a baseball fan I was then and am now. Hell, things may get bad. I may call you later, David. We may do the same thing.
Sure.
But, you know, yeah. Well, I did that. I wish I could find that thing because it had, like, it used to have those big old fat batteries in them. Those, what were those, D batteries or whatever?
Yeah.
And you'd have like six of them in there, and you would just play the game, and it was, you know, that was enough for us back in 1978, 79 for sure.
I'm telling you. And, you know, it's funny, Logan is laughing because of the 92 Sid Bream slide that we were talking about, you know, and it was like, what was I doing? I was like, oh, well, I was laying in bed because I had to get up early the next day to go to work watching it, and then the phone's just ringing like crazy. You know, we're all calling each other and talking about it.
I know.
I know. There was no texting or tweeting or any of that stuff.
Did you tweet about it, Dave? Did you?
We did the old school tweet. Yes. Yeah. Exactly.
Bill, we reminisced on that night. What is your story of the night Sid slid?
I was in Waycross. I just graduated from college at UGA earlier that year. And I just started, right after I got out of college, I couldn't find a job in broadcasting, so I got a job at Georgia Power. I was wrapping water heaters. I was the best damn water heater wrapper in South Georgia. And I had just started, and like the week before, but I was watching on television, the one thing I remember is my friend across the street, I had a buddy across the street, and he actually called me, like, 30 minutes before, he said, I'm going to bed. I'm not going to watch this. I don't want to see us get eliminated again. And I called him and just started screaming into his phone, and he didn't wake up. He did not wake up, believe it or not, until the next day and found out that the Braves had won. But I was just by myself in my mom's house because I was, you know, had gone back home to try to find a job. But now y'all are going to be really disappointed in me when I'm getting ready to say
all right,
here.
I'm going to brace for it. I'm ready.
I think Sid was out.
Logan's right. Already addressed this.
And that's Bill Shanks on the morning show. We'll catch up with him next week. Goodness gracious.
I do. I think Sid was out.
It is a very, very close call, but you, to make it clear, you're saying if there were replay in 92, he would have been called out.
I think it would have been very, yeah.
They have had trouble overturning the call?
There you go. That's right. I mean,
that's probably a good point. Whatever the umpire called would have stood.
Right. I mean, because are you going to, with all the hoopla that would have happened anyway, even in the tenure of replay, were you going to overturn that where a celebration was going on the field? Probably not. But I really think he was out. I think Lavalier, whatever his name was.
Lavalier, I think.
Yeah, I think he got him. But anyway, I'm glad the call was missed and the Braves won.
Bill coming off the top rope this morning, man. Goodness.
So if they'd gone to extra innings, I guess Cabrera would have had to stay in the game and play left, and Gron Gant would have had to move to second.
Oh, my God.
Bill,
yeah,
I know you know this, but a lot of people may forget, and Dave and I took a deep dive, that Jose Lien's error is sort of the unsung hero of that inning.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That was a huge play, and Jose Lien couldn't hit a lick, but he was a great defensive player, and he won
the Gold Glove that year.
He just choked. I mean, that was a crucial play in that inning. And no, I mean, he really was good defensively. He was great. Yeah, I'm not surprised at all that he won a Gold Glove. He he was tremendous. And you know, and the throw from Bonds was really good too. I mean, Bonds was a five-tool player when he first came up, and he had a great arm, played great defense out there. He was just an outstanding talent, obviously. And what a play though! What a great play! Great call by Skip. Just a phenomenal moment in our lives.
Jimmy Williams the third base coach?
Yes.
All right. He should probably get more credit than he does. No one talks about him for waving Bream and rolling the dice there too.
Yeah. Oh yeah. That's a great point. That's a really good point. Jimmy Williams was an excellent third base coach.
Yep.
He was of course Bobby's guy from Toronto, and he replaced Bobby in Toronto after Bobby came back to be the general manager of the Braves. But he was a great third base coach, great bunting coach, and was really, really good. But, you know, that was – yeah, you look back on it like you're going to send Sid Bream in that situation.
Logan said that Bream was just touching third when Bonds was getting to the ball.
Yes.
Wow.
At the same time.
And he still couldn't throw him. And it wasn't like he was deep in left field or anything.
No,
I think one of the better images of that, and I know both of you guys remember this, is after the celebration was full in effect, the mob scene at home plate, the camera crew cut out to Andy Van Slyke out in center field, just sitting on his butt watching that thing, man. And he was one of the bad guys of the whole season. He was the one that hit the ball that Otis Nixon robbed that season.
Yep.
That's right.
You know, recently I saw, I don't know what they were pushing, some sort of supplement, but Andy Van Slyke is now a spokesperson. And he looks good to be an old man, I'll tell you that. But
what do you mean, old man?
You know what I'm saying. Come on, guys.
Huh?
Just let me have my moment here. No, but he popped up on my TV screen, but I went back to thinking about that moment, which I watched yesterday, just sitting on his butt, just absolutely shocked about what happened. Because we have to remember, as elated as Atlanta fans was, the city of Atlanta, that's one of the darkest days in Pittsburgh sports history.
Oh, yeah.
They hate that moment.
They had three straight years of losing in the playoffs, too. The Reds in 1990, who won the World Series against the A's in a huge upset, and then the Braves in 91, where the Pirates were the favorites. I mean, they had a really good team that year. And then, of course, losing in 92 the way they did. No, and on top of that, the 0-60 catch, as you said, where Van Slyke was probably like, get me the hell out of here. And, yeah, I think Van Slyke does the same thing Frank Thomas promotes that thing.
But, yeah, I think so.
But he was a coach for Jim Leland for several years when Leland was in Detroit. I don't think he's coaching anywhere now, but hell, they don't hand out the media guide, so you barely know who's coaching anymore. You
oh, my gosh. I don't even know why they print the things.
Oh, my Lord. I just, you know.
They're like pamphlets now. They're not even hardly media guys.
I know it. It's awful. I love I've got a library, and I love media guides. And you know, it's a library. It's basically a library where I can go, and if I need to look up. I was thinking of something about last night. What was it? I was thinking about I need to go look up in a media guide. There was something, and I was, like, falling asleep and thinking about something. And I'm like, that would be in a media guide, and I couldn't find it online. What was that? Now I can't remember it because I was literally kind of falling asleep looking at something online, and I'm like, all right, that would be in my media guide. That's a whole other story, but they've put everything online now. But I love to be able to look up stuff in your media guide like that because it's always useful for us.
I asked this question to Logan earlier, and I gave my answer. I think I know your answer. Who's your all-time favorite Brave?
I love Dale Murphy.
I thought you would say that immediately, because that's my answer.
Yeah, no, well, and the only reason I hesitate is because I'm also a huge Phil Negro fan.
Oh, yeah.
I love Nuxie, and I still get a little verklempt. When I'm around, Nuxie and Munson were always the two people I would be around them. I'd kind of be like a little child, you know. I'd kind of be like, "Oh my God!" I just love, I love Phil Negro. I love Phil Negro. He'll turn 81 on April the 1st, and he's great, you know. But you know, I think Murph, especially now that I know him a little bit,
yeah.
He comes on my show occasionally, but no, I love Murph, and I, you know. I did an article a couple of days ago, David, and I know we've joked about this before, about doing this on the show, just coming on and pretend like it was 1980, whatever, wrote an article kind of proving the team 40 years ago and going back to those names. You know, when you're a child and you start watching baseball, those names are always important to you. And just like kids now who always love Freddie Freeman for the rest of their lives because he was the main guy for the Braves when they started watching the team. I mean, but Murph, you know, Murph and Horner were there, obviously. My first year I watched was in 78, so Horner came up in June, obviously, after he was drafted, and I loved him too. But those three, really, Murph, Nuxie, and Horner are always kind of my favorites, and but Murph right there. I mean, my gosh, he was everything to what that team was about. And you know, I wrote that article, and I basically previewed the 1980 season. I said, okay, here's what's happened over the all season. Here's who they brought in. Here's what it looks like they want to do, and it was a lot of fun writing that article. And but you know, people Logan's age and younger, they don't know what Braves baseball used to be. Braves baseball was so different because of how Atlanta was, and how it was still the South, and how TBS changed what the Braves were from just a team in Atlanta to a team that was nationally known and loved, whether they were good or bad. And, you know, now it's a lot different, obviously, because of the way the sport's changed and coverage has changed. It's just different. But back in the day when the Braves were on television all the time, I mean, and they were one of two teams, Braves and the Cubs, who were there all the time for people in middle of nowhere who didn't have a hometown team and didn't have the internet or ability to watch their favorite team. They had the Braves and the Cubs. And that was a special group. It will always be, for those of us who were alive then and loved them, that whole 78, I'll just say 78 to maybe 85, 86 group there, and that included some pretty crappy teams. They were pretty fun, though.
How about this? I was just doing a little math while we were talking, and I don't know why we were talking about the Braves and the Reds, but from 73 to 80 – the Braves were 39-105 against the Reds from 73 to 80, and that includes the 1980 season where the Reds went 16-2 against the Braves. And then the Braves had that little spurt there in the early 80s where they were good, but then from 85 to 90, let's see, 23-33, 46, 66 wins for the Reds, 42. So 66-42 from 85 to 90. And I just use the Reds as an example because they were in the same division then. So it was a little different then. But look, in the 70s, the Reds were great. I get that. And the Braves weren't. But that's what made 1991 and 92 so incredible, is because the Braves had been so crappy for basically 20 years. I mean, how do you go 105-39 against one team? That's literally like the Braves just sending up their single A team to play the Reds.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And now, what year did you say they were 16-2 against
1980.
The Braves? 1980. All right. Think about this, though. All right. That was the year I did the article on the other day. If the Reds were 16-2 against the Braves in 1980, the Braves were actually 81-80 that year. So think of how different that season would have been if the Braves had even been .500 against the Braves and won seven more games. They would have been a really good team, which they had a good team, but they were 16-2 against the Reds. That kind of does tell you all you need.
That
to know
is
about
the weird
Reds,
that they were that they were so bad against the Reds that year. I have to look into that, because even like 75 and 76, you know, that's what you think of the heyday of the big red machine. The Reds went 15-3 against the Braves in 75, which doesn't surprise me, and 12-6 against the Braves in 76. So they were only 9-27 against the Reds in those 2 years.
Wow!
So
and then when they got better in 1980, they were awful, 16-2 or 2-16.
I know.
Well, and you know that, and the weird thing about that year when I was doing that article of the day, they were 0-6 or 0-7 to start the year, and then finished 81-80. So I mean, they were a really good team, which is why the next year Bobby Cox got fired. Because, and here's an interesting little parallel to what's going on now: So the Braves were 81-80 in 1980. They added Gaylord Perry. They traded Doyle Alexander for John Montefusco. They traded Jeff Burrows away. They started having some more of the young talent come in, and they had a really bad first half or second half of the season. Because, you know, they did two halves that year with a strike.
The 81 season, yeah.
And they had one of the two halves was really bad, and that cost Bobby Cox his job because the expectations were higher after that 81-80 season.
Right.
Thinking that Murphy and Horner were leading them. And here's another thing that people need to realize that is totally different from today. And again, to add what you said, Dave, made 91 so special. The Braves had zero pitching from 1978 through 1990. I mean, and before that, of course, the 78, just when I started watching them. That's why I love Phil Niekro. Phil Niekro is the only pitcher worth a crap on those teams forever. I mean,
21-20.
21-20. You go and look at the year by year stuff of and you know, Rick Mailer, God bless him. You know, he was probably the second best pitcher of that era, and there were even a couple years where he would just disappear.
He was always great on opening day, and then
he was, yeah. Yes, happy Rick Mailer day, right?
Exactly.
This is his day. But they had no pitching. If they had any pitching at all, that there's no telling what that team could have done, because offensively, I mean, even in 1980, the season again that I wrote about, they had acquired Chris Chambliss to play first base. They still had Jeff Burrows in left and Gary Matthews in right. They traded those two the next winter, or the next spring, rather. And Murphy moved to center. They had Horner at third, so they had to line up with Jeff Burrows, who's a former American League MVP, Gary Matthews, who had a great year in 1980, Murphy, Horner, and Chris Chambliss. I mean, that was an unbelievable lineup 40 years ago, but they had no pitching whatsoever. I mean, it was just really, really rough. And that's why, thank God, in 1985, when Bobby Cox came back, he and Paul Snyder decided, you know what, this launching pad crap's not working. We need to go get some arms no matter what. And they did, and turned the whole fortunes of the organization
around.
That
was a good call.
But I'm telling you, because I was watching some game, and YouTube's all we got now on YouTube the other day. I put another video up the other day. Y'all like this too. A video, and you can go to YouTube or either go to my website and find it, of a fight in 1987. When Doyle Alexander had given up home runs to Cal Daniels from Warner Robins, Georgia, and Tracy Jones in, like, the first inning, the Braves came back with, like, three or four home runs in the second inning, and Bill Gullickson, former Expo, but he hit Andres Thomas, and a brawl ensued. It was pretty good, too. Gullickson about killed Thomas because he weighed about 150. but the reason I'm bringing this up, David, is because, you know, they were like six home runs in their first two innings, and that was the launching pad, right? That's what it was.
That's what it was built around. Yeah, absolutely.
Home runs. But that was helped by the fact, the matter, that the Braves had no pitching. And really, people thought the Braves couldn't have pitching in that ballpark. They were like, every time people – that they couldn't attract free agents. Pitchers would not want to come there. Ted Turner, on several occasions, outbid teams for pitchers. I think Floyd Bannister was one of them, who was a pretty good lefty pitcher, like in 1983. They wouldn't come to Atlanta because of that daggum stadium. And look what happened in 1991. Yeah. It all turned around.
They just couldn't sell the Buzz Capra winning the ERA title to other pitchers.
Correct.
Hey,
yes.
Bill, we had a debate earlier in the show. Answer this pretty quickly, if you don't mind, without overthinking it. In the franchise history, since 1966, the Braves came to Atlanta. Who is the Braves' biggest rival?
Dodgers.
Wow, we didn't get that one earlier, Dave.
No, but that's a good one because really of the does. Fact that they were division rivals for
of
so
course.
Long. Yeah.
I went with the Mets, and a lot of people are going Nationals as well. But I don't disagree with the Dodgers at all. That's a pretty good answer.
Well, I mean, you told me not to think about it, and I'm 50 now,
sure.
So I overthink everything. But, I mean, you know, when the Braves were good when the Braves were good in that time period I'm talking about, there was only one rival. It was the Dodgers. I mean, the Reds should have been a rival because geographically they were the closest team in the National League West. But I mean,
Hey, there was a time, was it 91, where we basically banned strawberries from produce stands in Georgia.
Oh, yeah. It was 91. Was the Braves-Dodgers series in the Braves-Dodgers series in 1991 when they were fighting for first place, we'll never see anything. Bobby Cox always said that. He said, we'll never, and you remember that, David. I mean,
oh, yeah, that's when Tommy Lasorda yelled at me.
Oh, that's right. I remember you telling that story.
Yeah.
That's
jerk.
Right.
Yeah. Came over here to Athens.
What a jerk.
Yeah, yeah, he was. He's a jerk. Hey, speaking of longtime Braves, I've just seen something online I want to pass along. Mark Bowen is reporting something very sad. Bill Bartholomew died yesterday, and he was the owner. He's the man who brought the Atlanta Braves to Atlanta, and he was a great man. Oh my God, just a tremendous man. He was still involved with the team as the chairman emeritus, and he brought the Braves from Milwaukee. Now, if you want to find something really cool on YouTube, there's a video, you'd have to search it. There's a video that really details from the Milwaukee perspective of losing the Braves to Atlanta. And man, it is awesome. It is really, really interesting. And you ought to go watch that. But Bill Bartholomew, who was in his early 90s, I hate that. He was a really, really good man. And I just talked to him a couple of times, interviewed him. He lived in Chicago. He was an insurance executive in Chicago many years, obviously very wealthy, but he was very nice, and the players and everybody just loved him. Last year when Brian Snitker's mom died, of course, this was during spring training, Snit flew up for the funeral, obviously, and he was there, and he looked up, and this was in Macon, Illinois, which is a couple hours from Chicago, and he looked up, and Bill Bartholomew was coming down the line to wish him well, and he just showed up, and he was just a lovely man, to use that expression, just really, really nice, and hate to hear that.
Well, I never met him, but the things I've heard about him everyone I've heard say things about him, just what you just said just now.
Yeah, just I hate that. He was... he was great, and he was he loved the Braves. And when Hank Aaron hit the home run, he was the executive down there on the field with the Braves Chief Nakahoma logo on his jacket. I mean, he really, really loved the Atlanta Braves. So that's awfully sad.
Well, Bill, we love you. We appreciate you. And when we talk to you next week, actually Logan will be out, I think. But when I talk to you next week, we will break down the Braves-Diamondback series and Braves and Padres and see what Stratomatic thinks of the start that the Braves are off to.
Get ready for that big home opener, right?
Oh, that's right. Well, see, the home opener will be next Friday.
That's right.
Who are they going to play?
First game
opener?
Ever in Truist Park, man. I think it was the Marlins.
Is that what it was? Okay.
I believe so.
I think so, yeah.
All right,
I
good, so. Good. All right, Bill, thank you, my
Thanks,
man.
Thanks, Bill. We appreciate it.
Hey, guys, stay well, everybody. Wash your hands, stay inside.
That's right.
Stay well. Thanks, guys.
All right.
Take care.
Thanks, Bill.
The one and only Bill Shanks. We do appreciate him more.
Without the ones like you who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.